Good morning, I'm Marilyn Smith. We're taking a look at the Columbus restaurant scene on All Sides Weekend. Joining me this morning is WOSU restaurant reviewer Rich Terapak, his son Rich, and Columbus Dispatch food and restaurant critic John Christensen. Good morning to you all. Thank you.
Good morning, Marilyn.
Good morning.
John, you recently came out with your 2010 dining guide. It was in the Dispatch last week, I believe. How is it? What are the criteria? How do you choose the top 10? In this case, there were 10 restaurants that were cited.
Well, there's no formula that I could give you. I wish I could have one. But the number one criterion is always going to be the food. You can have the most wonderful-looking restaurant in the world with really great service, but that generally gets people in once. If the food isn't top rate, they're not going to come back. And I feel that way for myself when dining out, and I'm sure that the readers feel the same way, that food is number one. So the restaurant's ability to sustain its menu at a very high quality over time is the number one criterion. Over how much time really depends, but the we're talking about years and years for many of these restaurants. A number of them have been open quite a while before getting into the top 10 or what we used to have in Flusher Times, the top 20.
Well, there used to be a second tier, and I recall last year I think there was, but this year there was no second tier.
Right. Space is a problem with the size of the dining guide supplement.
Ah, so it's more a concern of the newspaper than it is having enough restaurants that qualify as being very
Absolutely,
good.
Absolutely, because I think in spite of the recession, I think that in the last, I'll say, 10, 15 years, there's been an upward trend in overall quality. A restaurant which today might be rated as some kind of good average would probably have been in the top 10 20 years ago, easily.
I agree.
So the standards have been raised quite a bit, and that's why I would be confident of being able to have a top 20 list that that you could rely on, in the sense that you could go to any of them chosen randomly and have a good experience.
Now, as you mentioned, some of these restaurants are repeaters. They've been on any number of times. What are some of your top 10?
Well, the I'll say that the Refectory is, I think, always going to be on everybody's list. They have sustained the model of a classic French restaurant for an incredible amount of time. They've got a huge investment in their wine cellar and the day-in, day-out, the best wine program in town, bar none.
They've got some specials to go on with the wine program. I've noticed that they've got 10 sips for $10 on certain nights.
Is there someone there counting?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess you're going to get one glass per sip. And, you know, they're doing some other things with the patio and things. They really keep improving, I think. They're doing a good job. Kamal does a great job on quality, and Chef Ricard has been there a good while, directly from Lyon, France, I think.
Yes, I think the ability to improve over so many years instead of just getting into a rut is really an outstanding quality for any restaurant to have, because human nature being what it is, if you hit a formula that works, you're going to stay with it. And to keep reinventing yourself, I think, is very difficult, very demanding on not just you, the manager and the chef, but your entire staff. And these restaurants that have been in the top 10 for quite a while are, I think, remarkable in that sense.
But perhaps that is one way that they re-energize their creativity and their commitment and don't become complacent, because they keep reinventing themselves.
Yes, and that keeps bringing people in, and it keeps bringing the regulars in, because the most demanding patrons are not typically going to be going in and ordering the same thing every time. They're going to want variety. They don't go out in order to repeat last week's experience or last month's. And these restaurants like the Refectory that keep coming up with variations on this very high standard that they already have are going to attract people like that, and the people who are willing to sustain a restaurant like that. Now, we talked about the wine briefly, the wine program. And Rich Sr. was pointing out that they have a lot of bargain ways to get wine. But even the regular list, as a rule, is going to be priced lower than a given bottle is going to be priced lower there than this exact same bottle at a lot of middling restaurants.
Which is pretty incredible considering the inventory they keep.
Yes, and the care that they take with the service of the wine, the quality of the glasses they use, which are very expensive, and the amount of labor that they expend just in serving the wine, mm-hmm. Let alone the cost of maintaining, you know, tying up all that money for all those years in aging as many wines as they do. So it's an outstanding operation, which would, in my opinion, show well in any French city or town.
Hmm. Yeah, and besides that, Monday through Thursday, we can go to the bistro. Rich and Cindy and Roberta and I have done this a couple times and had a great three-course meal with wine recommendations, and what is it now, $22 or something like that?
I think it's $23.95.
Yeah, it went up a little bit, but it's not significantly. Yeah. It's still a deal.
Yeah. It's a deal, and it's coming from the same kitchen that's putting on the this first-class French menu.
Right. So,
and this is a limited menu during the week, Monday.
Right. It's a price-fixed menu. There are selections for each of the courses,
two or three options for each.
For each course.
And does this change regularly as well?
Every week, mm-hmm. Which is amazing. Yeah. I mean, just think of that much work. Forget about the rest of the menu.
Yeah.
The work of having a brand new menu every week, and the chef Blondin tries to have the each week's bistro menu, as they call it, reflect a different region or city in France. That's just a lot of work right there, and you can't sustain that without a huge investment in your kitchen and in the size of your kitchen staff.
Well, and a commitment on the part of just about everybody.
Yes. And it really lands at the desk of the manager. We talk a lot over the past couple of decades about star chefs. But I can tell you that every star chef who's turning out great food has got a wonderful manager behind him or her. Now, sometimes it's the chef himself or herself who's the owner, mm-hmm. and it's also the manager. But you can't put on that kind of food without having a top-rate infrastructure behind you, a management infrastructure.
292-8513 is the number to call. We're talking about Columbus restaurants on All Sides Weekend today with the Terrapacks, Rich and his son Rich, and John Christensen of the Columbus Dispatch. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd like to hear from you as well. 292-8513, or you can email us at allsideswosu.org. Name a couple of other restaurants that made the list. Barcelona comes to my mind, and that has not been around nearly as long as the Refectory. What qualifies that restaurant?
Well, again, they have been on an upward trend, not that they didn't start at a high level mm-hmm. when they opened. I think it's going to be 15 years ago now.
Right. For those of us who remember Diables.
boy, that does take me back.
But they're
same location.
You know, they've done... Year in and year out, they've done the most serious job of what's being called Spanish food mm-hmm. or large plates, small plates, the tapas side of the menu that's followed by main dishes. You can just get more serious versions of that there very well.
And I think, you know, one of the things following a Spanish menu, some of the most innovative cooking going on these days in menu planning is the Spanish, particularly the stuff coming out of the city of Barcelona. So, you know, it's a good matchup. They picked the right name.
They sure did, and it's influencing the cooking in Western Europe generally at the better restaurants everywhere. Hmm. And so here we're lucky to have a place like Barcelona that is doing an excellent job all the way to the desserts, which are all made in-house.
And I've heard they have a fabulous patio.
Oh, they do.
They do.
And best patio in Columbus. Mm. And I think much like the Refectory, they're a restaurant that week to week, I think they update their menu. They, you know, usually keep a couple favorites on there.
Like those scallops and cream.
Yeah, and of course the paella, but they'll also, you know, change the ingredients in the paella. It's a wonderful dish there. It's usually served for two servings. Yeah, they do a great job of keeping things fresh and changing so that people don't get bored with the experience. You go back. You know, it is a neighborhood restaurant. They have a lot of, you know, frequent diners.
And the patio is non-smoking, which is unusual, as well as being the nicest outdoor seating generally in the city. The Rich Jr. mentioned the paella, and they have their what I'll call their house paella on the menu all the time. But the menu changes every week there, and they often will have two other versions of paella being offered, but certainly at least one. And then...
And that's kind of a Spanish stew.
No, it's a Spanish saffron rice dish, usually with, you know,
but
mixed seafoods and vegetables, but then you can do it with sausage, chorizo, and chicken, or shrimp and mussels. Many ways to do it. That's the neat thing about it.
And they're making their own chorizo there right now, which is another hallmark of people who are really working hard to put on a great product. And we talked about the bargain bistro meals at the refectory at Barcelona. I think it's Tuesday through Friday. They have a $30 fixed-price meal with seven or eight courses. Now, they're very small compared to the gargantuan helpings you get in most American restaurants.
Nonetheless, seven or eight ought to fill you up.
Yes. it'll definitely fill you up. And it's not just picking items from that week's regular menu and scaling them down. It's yet another menu. Most of the items on this fixed-price menu are not on the other menu. Mm-hmm. So just think
of all that work involved, it's
just amazing that they can sustain it, but they are sustaining it, and they're doing it at a very high quality. And that's one thing that makes it very easy, I think, to put them on the top 10.
Yeah. Kent Rigsby's been doing, at least at lunch, those specials.
The blue plate specials.
Yeah.
Yes.
And again, that's those very frequently, and I think they're $10, is that right?
And Rigsby's is another restaurant that really changed the entire scene, not only in the Short North, but in Columbus. There was a time when there were only three or four really good fine dining restaurants here. And Kent Rigsby was able to come on the scene and really make some huge strides. It was cutting edge at the time, I think.
Right, and it really did account for the rebirth of that neighborhood. Just as Spaggio's did in the Grandview Strip.
Yeah, so they were both pioneers in areas that weren't known at all for restaurants of any kind.
And now both are two of the best restaurant strips, in Central Ohio.
Yeah.
And they're well attended by people not only in the neighborhood, but people coming in.
Well, they're destinations,
they really
absolutely.
292-8513, we're talking about the Columbus restaurant scene with Rich Terapak and his son Rich, who do restaurant reviews here at WLSU. Along with Dispatch food critic John Christensen. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to have you. Give us a call, 292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I imagine that this list is alive and well on the Dispatch website, so people can still go and refer to it.
It should be. I never assume anything when it comes to websites.
Well,
John, could you put the other 10 on the website so we could get back to 20? It'd be fun to have.
Well, that would be one way to use the website. That creating new material that isn't in the paper is certainly to have the secondary tier, and it gets a lot more other restaurants out there competing for something.
Yeah.
John, are there any places, or one or two places you might have came very close to being on the list, you might recommend, that if people might not have seen outside of what they read in the Dispatch?
Well, I always wonder what to do about places like
L'Antibes, for instance. Or
yes, certainly L'Antibes, which was founded, as by a chef who had probably the greatest breakthrough in the Columbus restaurant scene when he founded L'Armagnac in the mid-70s, and which is in different hands now and is, I think, still finding its way. But certainly it would be an easy placement in the top 20 if we had one.
Well, we can continue this conversation right after a break, and we'll take your calls as well.
Get the stories behind the headlines every day on All Things Considered. Hot summer days increase ozone pollution and make it dangerous for some people to breathe outside.
When you have asthma, every time you're in your school bus, your tummy gets upset for about like a week.
On your drive home, listen to award-winning coverage from the WOSU news team on WOSU 89.7 FM.
And this is WOSU 820 NPR News. 57 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:21 this morning. Sunshine today, a high of 68. A few clouds tonight, a low of 48 degrees. A 50% chance of rain for Saturday. Otherwise cloudy skies, a high of 60 degrees. Clouds with a slight chance of rain on Sunday and a high of 58. All Sides Weekend continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
I'm Marilyn Smith. This is All Sides Weekend. We're talking with Columbus Dispatch restaurant critic John Christensen, along with WOSU's Rich Terapak and his son Rich, who do restaurant reviews here for us. During the break, we were talking previous to that about some possible second-tier additions to your list, but the topic of parking came up, and particularly as it applies to the Short North, where the cost of meters recently went up. And I was mentioning the fact that we did a story, Mandy Trimble of our staff did a story, and went down and talked with people who worked in the shops and in the restaurants who had previously parked along Goodale Park and no longer parked there or had trouble leaving every 2 hours to feed the meter. And it's also become a problem for people who go to the bars down on Park Street and for people who dine there. Mm-hmm. And I think the valet services used to use the park as well.
Yes, and it's not only that the meters are more expensive, but their coverage lasts until 10 p.m.
It went from 12,
most of them used to be free after 6.
6 p.m., right.
Plus it, yes, and put it...
And then they put a few stealth meters in that were enforced until 8.
Yeah.
And in almost none of these cases can you see that from the parking side of the meter.
Oh, you have to go around the other side.
You have to get out of your car, go around to the other side,
and read the
fine print to see how long it's enforced, and then hope that you have enough money, enough quarters with you to feed
well,
it.
Well, you're going to need quarters, but to be sure, I think we went down to Need, which is
right across from the convention center, very little parking. You know, the last place I think that was there, a Chinese restaurant, sort of sushi boat restaurant, struggled because of that same thing. And, there's just, no parking over there. But the meters in the Short North, I think, for 2 hours is now almost like $4 and quarters, I believe.
Well, how about the ones on
whoever's
Gay Street?
Whoever's got that much change on them. I mean, and, the poor people that work down here are getting, really put out by this.
Yeah. Right, because they used to be able to fill the meter and for as long as 12 hours, and now it's a two-hour increment. Per loading. And I thought there was some discussion when they started talking about increasing the meter rates of putting a credit card slot in there so you could actually just, swipe it and go on about your business. But
that's become very popular in Washington, D.C., actually. They have a little smart card that you, you actually, because so many people meter it there, that you actually, you fund it. Like people fund their Starbucks latte cards, and you swipe it by. The technology is out there. It's not terribly expensive. It's more efficient for the city because they don't have to send collectors out. It's, done electronically. It saves money all around. I think we're just kind of a step behind right now.
Well, and these Short North meters are being surveyed constantly.
Yep.
I see meter people out there all the time.
Yeah, it's definitely a fundraising effort. It's being
defended. It's misplaced because it is inhibiting the traffic.
Absolutely.
I think maybe if somebody from Experience Columbus is listening, put some pressure on these folks.
Well, and that's another thing we want to talk about this morning is the Experience Columbus Days are coming up. And all of the Dine Original restaurants are participating beginning on October 8th. So, anything that furthers business, and particularly restaurant business, is of interest to us. And I'm sure our listeners as well. And we have Helen on the line. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to put my vote in for Alana's as a top restaurant. I don't hear much not talked about as often as others, but it's my favorite, and just reading the menu in itself is delightful. And she uses a lot of local produce and so forth.
And I think that her restaurant is probably mentioned once or twice every time we do this show.
Right.
Okay.
And the fact that she uses local produce and other things.
And she's an exceptionally creative chef. I mean, that's really when I'm looking for something to kind of, that out of the norm, that's one place that I always look to go.
I believe she feeds her staff beforehand, too, which is really nice because they can really comment on the dishes.
Most good restaurants should.
Exactly. Any top-tier restaurant, and I do consider that one of the top-tier restaurants in Columbus, absolutely. You know, you put specials out. If your wait staff hasn't tasted them, you know, they're not informed. You know,
they can't get out on the
floor
and sell them.
They can't answer a question.
Yeah. Right. You hate that blank stare when you ask a question.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. 292-8513. And we have Sandra on the line who apparently has an opposing point of view about Barcelona's paella.
Oh, hi. Great show today.
Thanks.
I'm always surprised when Barcelona gets good remarks because they truly make the worst paella I ever had. And I understand maybe someone that's never been outside Columbus or, you know, like Miami or New York or D.C., find it good, but I always find it is undercooked, not good flavor, very wet, and I've tried other things in the menu, and I'd rather sincerely go to Applebee's, and I personally do not chain restaurants. I'm a big Columbus Originals supporter, but Barcelona, I'm always surprised that Barcelona gets good remarks, because I've been there probably 5-6 times and never had a meal worth the price. I mean, you can go to Black Creek Bistro and have a far better experience. Alana is also a great place. I had lunch yesterday at Lavash in Clintonville, and it was incredible. So I don't know if I'm missing out the mark on Barcelona. Maybe I order.
You've had their paella 5 or 6 times? Or you've been to Barcelona 5 or 6 times?
I've been to Barcelona 5 or 6 times.
Because, I mean, I've had their paella once. I did find it good. And for the record, I have had paella in Madrid and Mallorca. I have been outside of Columbus. I don't think it's that bad. But everyone is entitled to their opinion.
And again, I mentioned one dish and you know, having also not we weren't traveling together, but having also spent some time in Spain. There's a scallop dish at lunchtime that I think they still have on the menu. I hope they do. That is just terrific. You know, it's one of the best things I have to eat in town. So give that a try if you could.
Maybe that's what I need to do. But every time I've had to pay a couple of times and it was equally bad. I had the arroz con pollo and it was awful. I had chicken, it was overcooked. The steak was, I don't know, I just don't, you know, sincerely, I think Applebee's probably has a better menu. And
a better menu?
I just don't understand why the critics give it. You know, the ambience is wonderful. The wine list is incredible. The staff is wonderful as well. But Betty's in the Short North has better food. I don't know. And I'm a big Black Creek Bistro person. I think they're incredible. Ken and Michelle do a fantastic job, but...
Well, we'd agree with you on the Black Creek. I think we all agree that that's a very good place and one of the relatively recent additions. We hope that they move into their new quarters in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, it's brand new on the top 10 this last week.
Yeah. And it is taking them an extraordinarily long time to move.
Had a tour of the new building. It's it needs quite a bit of renovation. I mean, and he's doing – Kent Peters, owner of Rebakir, is doing a lot of the work himself.
Well, I know that story since I have a husband who's a remodeler.
Yeah, and in an effort to, you know, do the work himself and, you know, save the money in order so they can operate a restaurant, you know, it's going to take – I mean, he told me – I think a year and a half ago that it would take probably 2 or 3 years. So that will be coming, and I think it'll be an amazing space for a restaurant, the old Firehouse, if you don't know what we're speaking about, at Oak and Parsons. And it's got a great parking lot next to it, which they do have access to now, which is one of the best additions they've made in the last year or two is the parking situation. But, yeah, Black Creek's a great restaurant.
You know, I know that Barcelona has been on your list pretty consistently for the last few years, and I have never heard anyone – have a negative review of it. Most of the people have to. I have not eaten there myself, but I have heard wonderful things about it. Every once in a while, though, you know, people do come along who, and Sandra sounded like she may have a pretty broad background and has been to many places and may have tasted food that she preferred. But we, you know, certainly don't encourage anybody from giving their opinion.
Certainly.
292-8513. If you'd like to call and talk with our panel of experts, or you can email us, as Shirley has done, and she wants to know where to find couscous, North African foods, and vegetarian foods. Any ideas? Moroccan food?
Well, Moroccan food has always been a difficulty here. The last caller mentioned lavash, which periodically tries to put a Moroccan-inspired special on the menu of the day. I would call them and ask them for a heads up as to when they're going to do something like that.
I can't think of any Moroccan. It's one of my favorite cuisines. Yeah, so we make it a lot at home. Come over to our house.
Yeah, a lot of people have talked about opening Moroccan restaurants, but nobody's really done so.
292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we have another email from Mike about a great taco truck on the corner of 5th Avenue and Forsyth, consistently flavorful and a very friendly husband and wife. 5th and Forsyth
is... the one back by the airport, maybe?
No. Okay. This is right off Neal Avenue. It's about a block behind there, which is kind of an odd location in a way. I guess it would be across from some of the shops there on that end of 5th Avenue. And we are seeing these taco trucks showing up in
all kinds of trucks. Columbus
is cupcake cups.
There's a new Cajun truck. I think I saw an article about in the Dispatch down on High Street, kind of near Gay downtown. These things are popping up everywhere. There's the Foodie Cart, which is I think Asian small plates that is being done also around town. It's really catching on. It's an amazing thing for the city. I don't know if you know that awful Bourdain episode that we talked about when they did the preview of Austin right after Columbus and made it look quite amazing. A lot of what was going on there was this, you know, the food truck thing and the, you know, different cuisines and different, you know, competitors.
We're trying to get those guys back to town, by the way, to show them the real world. But the just as to the foodie cart and some of those other carts, which are getting some good press, I know Alt Eats has had a nice article. Please put it on a website, because if I'm looking for it at lunch, my office filter won't let me go to tweets or Facebook, so I can't find you. Put it on a website.
Well, there is a website that at least lists the taco trucks, because we've had a number of
Taco Trucks Columbus. That's
Particular card is what I was looking for, and I couldn't find it. But and also the guy from DeLevy is starting his own cart, which is a pretty good product.
Well, how is he going to co-locate?
I think he hired his brother. Yeah, he was working there alone, and I think he hired his brother, and they're going to start doing some, you know, portable about-town stuff. So.
Now, these, I think, do have to get a permit from the city.
Oh, absolutely.
And from the
probably the health department as well.
Yeah. The Dispatch article mentioned that in a number of cases, these are people who had changed jobs, left jobs, lost jobs, and just decided they were going to take this risk and do something that they'd always wanted to do. I would think, however, when it's raining or it's cold, it could be a problem.
People still walk around downtown in the winter. I mean, you know, in the population centers, you know, or if you park outside a major office park, you know.
The owner to stand out there when it's, 12 degrees.
Most of them have kitchens inside. They stay, you know, probably fairly warm that way.
Okay, so you're not talking about a cart per se. You're talking about a
truck.
I'm talking
about carts. Yeah, the cart people have a shorter season.
Yeah, that's a different story, I guess. Yeah.
292-8513. David is on the line, and you can go ahead and join us as well. David.
Yes. Good morning. Good morning to everybody. I just wanted to weigh in. The last caller, or one before that, talked about places you can find couscous and vegetarian.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I happen to own the Olive Tree Cafe, and it's amazing, you guys. This topic came up because this is the next item we are planning on adding in the near future, and I wanted just to mention. Not only we have several good vegetarian dishes, for the audience to understand, couscous is not just the grain. Couscous it's not just a Moroccan dish. Couscous is a North African dish, and it's really, it's a meal. Not just the grain, that which is steamed semolina, is one side. This is the grain, but the they cook it with a beautiful, like a beef stew, with tons of vegetables, and one of the main vegetable in that beef stew is pumpkin, and this is the appropriate time of the year that we have so much pumpkin. And this is something that I'm planning on adding in the near future.
You're right. It is. It is North African. We probably should have added that. And by the way, there are lots of different vegetarian spots that we could probably come up with. And there are at least a few vegetarian choices on most menus in town these days.
Absolutely.
And where is the Olive Tree, David?
The Olive Tree is on 3185 Hilliard Rome Road in Hilliard.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that information.
Thank you.
And we have John. I'm sorry.
I just going to mention that is a good restaurant, Olive Tree. Very good Middle Eastern food.
Okay. And John is on the line and wants to know about good Mexican restaurants in Columbus. Go ahead, John.
Yes. My wife and I, we live in Centerville in the Dayton area, and we have so many good Mexican restaurants that we can go to and have a good meal.
In Centerville?
Yes, in Centerville.
Wow. Hmm.
Without breaking the bank, and I'm about to move to Columbus, and I wanted to know if you have a recommendation as far as Mexican restaurants are concerned.
I don't know if we can do a lot of haute cuisine, but there are some decent Mexican shops, and Cuco's is one of my favorites up on Henderson Road.
Absolutely,
it's a great product.
It's also got Mexican authentic Mexican groceries as well.
It started off as a grocery, I think.
Right? Yeah. Exactly, and it's very affordable. It's not hoity-toity. I mean, it's you're paying for the food, which is what we all kind of prefer.
Right.
And the one up on Riverside Drive, what is that one? That's way up, almost near 161.
I'm not familiar with that one, but I was thinking of the one on Riverside at Grandview.
Oh, Rancho Allegro.
Yeah. Which puts on good Tex-Mex, I'll call it. It's not
right.
True Mexican.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's Tex-Mex done by people with Mexican heritage, and so I think it's a lot more authentic than you get from the chains.
And you gave that a very good review, as did we.
Yes, and I was very surprised by it, to tell you the truth, because mm-hmm. normally when you go into a restaurant that size, you don't expect...
it's the old TJ's.
Yeah,
it's
the
huge.
Food should be manageably good.
It was even good on Cinco de Mayo when I went, which was a foolish thing to do.
There's a kind of an upscale chain that moved, that opened up in the Polaris area, Cantina Laredo, and it's, as far as I know, it's the only outlet they have in Ohio.
And that's a little more upscale.
Yeah, that's definitely upscale. I'm sure that anybody who's from Mexico could quarrel with the authenticity of this or that, but they've done a very good job of having fresh ingredients and garnishing the dishes in with more than the standard rice and beans.
Yes.
So I would recommend that, even though it is technically a chain.
Okay, thank you very much for your call this morning. We are talking with our panel of restaurant reviewers, Rich Terapak and his son Rich, who do restaurant reviews here at WOSU, and John Christensen of the Columbus Dispatch. We are going to take a quick break here and come back and take the rest of your calls. Thanks very much.
On the next Fresh Air, we remember a pioneering director and an actor who was one of Hollywood's leading men. Arthur Penn, who directed Bonnie and Clyde, and Tony Curtis, known for his impersonation of a female jazz musician in Some Like It Hot. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record on WOSU-TV. Each week, a discussion with political analysts and news reporters, they analyze the top stories of the week. And you can catch Columbus on the Record tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV.
Support for WOSU comes from the Columbus Foundation, celebrating our nationally ranked library, zoo, and science museum. With donors and funds in 33 Ohio counties, the Columbus Foundation, where your philanthropy and your community come together.
Get access to WOSU anytime at our website, WOSU.org. You can hear the latest updates from NPR and WOSU News from the convenience of your computer by streaming on the web. Listen online anytime at WOSU.org. And it's 58 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today and a high right around 68. A few clouds tonight, a low of 45. A 50% chance of rain for Saturday, cloudy skies and a high of 60. All Sides Weekend continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Marilyn Smith. We're talking about food and restaurants and the Columbus food scene with our restaurant reviewers, Rich Terapak and his son, Rich, who do restaurant reviews here at WOSU, along with Columbus Dispatch food critic John Christensen. And I did mention briefly before that it's coming up on the 8th of October. It's Experience Columbus Days, and all 50 Columbus Dine Originals will be taking part in that. And this is a series of reduced-cost meals for, I guess, 4 or 5 days.
Yes, it depends on which restaurants. You know, they kind of run the gamut from, you know, smaller, less expensive to, you know, some of the finer dining establishments. But and so they generally do like a, you know, a three-course price-fixed menu for 15 20 all the way up to $30. Generally, the $30 ones will have, you know, a solid protein, you know, fairly something that costs, you know, in product. But it's a great week for Columbus. It's a great week to get out and try some places that you haven't tried before. These are all independently, locally owned restaurants. That's one of the great things about it. Same types of places we try and support on this show. So, you can go to their website, Dine Originals Columbus, to get a list, and they actually have every single restaurant's menu on there, so you can do a lot of research before you go.
You can shop.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's grown to 50 restaurants. It started out, it was far fewer than that just a couple of years ago.
20 or so, yeah.
And we talked earlier about several different ways of getting really bargain-priced meals, and this is absolutely one of them.
And this is one of maybe 3 events throughout the year. One is just Columbus Dine Originals.
There's one. There's Experience Columbus. There's Dine Originals Restaurant Week, and then there's the, Columbus Restaurant Week, which I think is some of the more corporate restaurants. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the several of the Mitchell's places. There's several of these that go on, but this is a good one.
292-8513. We've had a number of people who have sent in emails. From Katie, she wants to know, some time ago we mentioned an Indian restaurant that had a wide variety of food, including kid-friendly surroundings. She missed the name of it, and can't think of the name of it.
I'm struggling to remember, yeah.
The last Indian place I remember mentioning was Amul India, which is up on Sawmill Road in the Sawmill Center, close to Hard Road up there.
Oh, you know what, John? I think you mentioned one that had kind of a Bollywood theme.
Bollywood Bistro.
There you go.
Yeah. I don't know if the kids would like it.
I don't know either. But and near, not too far from there is Tadka, which is also brand new, on 161 near Sawmill.
Indian Oven downtown, if you're in the German Village area, it's actually on East Main Street.
If you're in the Hilliard area, Venky's, V-E-N-K-Y apostrophe S, which is from the outside it looks like it's going to be a hole in the wall, but it's very nice inside. Mm. It's at Roberts and Rome Hilliard Road. Very flavorful Indian food, even when you order it mild, which is unusual.
Well, I hope that helps, Katie. We've also heard from Mark, who has a group of 7 people who want to get together on each other's birthdays, and they would like some ideas for suitable places to go for their party. Reasonable prices, he says.
Reasonable prices. Party atmosphere. Huh.
Those large tables at the, you know, Thurman Cafe, yeah, they've got these tables that seat, I think, 8 or 9 people in the back of the restaurant. That's a kind of a fun place to go.
And is that the place that sells the great big burgers?
The food there is a conversation as well. Everything's kind of oversized. At the medium price point, that'd be a decent place to go.
Now, can you make reservations there? Because
you
I've
cannot.
Seen
That's
lines.
That's the tough thing about 7 people. Yeah, a lot of times you end up waiting a solid hour there.
You know, if you want to spend more money, there are some restaurants that have smaller private rooms that be okay. Mitchell's downtown has a nice back room that is not overwhelmingly large that makes the...
So does the Top Steakhouse, actually.
Yeah, the Top.
Kobe Japanese Steakhouse on Morris Road across from Easton would be a place to try.
Hey, we did that for my birthday, that one, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, I hope that helps for Mark. 292-8513, and John is on the line and wants to know about a Persian bakery that used to be on Bethel Road. Go ahead.
Hi, yeah, actually, the gentleman that answered the phone gave me the new address. I looked for Nanak Bakery on Bethel Road, and he gave me that and asked me if I want to put a comment. If there's anything new for this bakery, I know it's their long time in the business, and they did a very good job.
I haven't been to the new location. I reviewed the original location some years ago, shortly after it opened, and liked what I found there. So I'll have to chase them down, too.
Okay, and what was the name of the bakery again?
Nanak's. N-A-N-A-K, apostrophe S.
Okay, well, we have a new student assistant here on all sides, and he'll have to be congratulated for taking the initiative to find out the answer to this man's question. Thanks so much for your call. And Rick wants to mention the Fig Cafe, which apparently is an ethnic restaurant here in town. Go ahead.
Hi. Same. Is this Ann?
I'm sorry?
Is this the radio show?
Yes, it is.
Ann Fisher's out on Friday.
Okay, you guys are doing great, by the way.
Thanks.
Interestingly enough, I was taken out to lunch yesterday at a place, and I saw the little poster inside this place on Bethel Road, and it said Nanak's bakery items were sold there, and it's a place called the Fig Cafe, and my friend Jim took me over there for lunch, and it's really just a little luncheonette type of a setting, but the food was phenomenal. The lady is from Sierra Leone, and we had Jaffa rice with a fish, tilapia with chicken and stew. It was very, very nice, and grilled vegetables. It was really, really quite lovely. It was beautiful, and it was very inexpensive. So I just thought the Fig Cafe, just a second, you just mentioned Nanak's, and I had never seen that before. So
it's a good recommendation. It's in the same shopping center that Nanak's used to be in.
Maybe it's in the same space, perhaps. I don't know. I don't know if it could be, but it's in the same shopping center where near Reed Road, I guess, is what Go Down Road. It's right adjacent to that area. But I was just really, really completely knocked out with the food's quality, and the taste was absolutely fantastic. So I don't rave too much too often, so I thought I would at least.
I agree with your assessment. I did give them a good review.
Great. Well, thank you very much for doing a great show, and I really like her show. It's a great show. Okay?
I'll tell her. Thanks. 292-8513. And we are talking about Columbus restaurants today. And the proliferation of these ethnic restaurants is just phenomenal.
It is terrific, isn't it? Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, I guess not only do we must have a market for it. I think the palate has matured in Columbus. You know, as Gordon Gee will tell us, there are 100 different languages spoken in Ohio State. And I think that kind of helps keep these places in business, and it's a terrific it's a blessing.
The world's getting a lot smaller. I mean, you know, people are getting more open to, you know, other people's cultures and ways of eating, and, you know, I think that can only be a good thing.
And people travel more.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's just added such a rich texture to the city of Columbus. It's just not the same city I first moved to, 100 years ago.
No doubt about it.
That's the reason, what was his name? Ruhlman has a lot to learn. The guy who did the TV show, I'm not sure I got the name right.
Yeah, you do. Michael Ruhlman.
Yeah.
292-8513, and we do have Scott on the line. Go ahead, Scott.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, it seems like they have a beautiful room there at a place in Worthington called the Wine Bistro, back in the back, for the woman that wanted to have a private gathering. It looks like it seats about 10 people.
Hmm. And the woman named Mark.
It was a guy, but that's okay.
Oh, okay. Well, that's just when I tuned in and I heard you talking about
it. Yeah, no, but it's good to know.
Yeah, and they have good food there and good entertainment. It's a nice place. I like it.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate all of our audience members who are often very generous in chipping in with their ideas. We do have a couple of just random notes today.
I always make a few notes when we come in just to talk about kind of new happenings around town.
Well, Liz Lesner is not letting any moss grow under her feet. She's apparently opening back up the jury room.
Yeah, the jury room on Mound, which was originally, it's the oldest continuously operating bar in Columbus.
Except when it's closed.
Well, yeah, I guess. I think that's by law. It has to close at 2. It opened up in 1831. And it's
because it's across from the courthouse.
Yeah, exactly. And I always have to have a good bar for the lawyers. But, they're going to, redecorate it for about a month to 6 weeks or so. They hope to open in early to late November. I'm not sure exactly. But I think they're going to try and keep – I think they have the original bar, the original ceiling in there, and then they're going to try and decorate with some 19th century furniture and whatnot and really try and kind of keep it old school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Liz's grandma does the decorating, or her mother. Yeah.
Anything she touches seems to do pretty darn well in Columbus.
And this is the restaurant that sits kind of right along Mountain, and they have a mezzanine floor, I think, or a second floor.
Yeah, there's a balcony floor. I believe that's the same one.
It's catty corner to the big large courthouse, or I guess across,
right across
the street
from
where they're building the new new one.
And this will be restaurant number 5 for her?
It will, and it's going to be much in the same. The food's going to be a lot in the same spirit as the other places, very casual, clean food. And
Local products.
Yeah, local products, and I think the hours are going to be the same as all our other places, 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. So they service the wait staff crowd as well.
Okay, and we have a new wine and beer store going in at the North Market.
Yes. Unfortunately, Grapes of Mirth, which was a lovely store, they went out of business, and there's a new place. What's it called?
Bottle and Barrel
moving in there. They're going to feature wine and beer.
Talking to some of the North Market folks, they're going into the same location, but they hope to grab a larger spot.
It was cramped. It is quite tiny.
But they're trying to find another location within North Market for them eventually.
And there's another Graffiti Burger opening up.
Yes.
It'll be the third here in Central Ohio in, 6 months?
At least in a year. And Graffiti Burger, I've said it before on the show, is one of my favorite burger places I've found. It's opening up on North Campus, I think just north of Hudson in the old KFC location. So I'm sure that'll be a huge hit with the dormitories not far away.
And it's local.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And they use local products.
They use Stan Evans Bakery, I think, for their buns.
Adino's,
okay. Yeah. I know it was one of them, but they do a terrific job. So if you're in the Clintonville campus area, look forward to that coming to town.
And then there's one up on Sawmill.
So the original is up on Sawmill. The other is on Fifth Avenue in Grandview, just kind of in front of the Giant Eagle. Is that there?
Yeah, it's just a little west of the Giant Eagle. Yeah.
And we usually don't dabble in rumors, but we have one that both of us have heard. I heard this as well. That Cameron Mitchell is going to purchase the Burgundy Room.
I heard he had purchased it. I have not heard anything about what exactly he plans to do with it, or if he plans to keep the name or keep the theme going. John, do you know anything yet? No?
Not a word, but if he does do it, I hope it leads to them taking reservations.
Yeah, that would be good.
Because, they're right in the middle of that Short North parking problem.
Exactly.
And when you have no reservations to uncertain parking, it keeps people away.
Yeah, nobody wants to feed $4 into the meter if they don't know if they're going to
take it. And yet it has been continually a restaurant worth going to.
Yeah.
And that'll be 3 restaurants for him, right, in a couple of blocks on High Street.
Mm-hmm.
292-8513. We've got Keisha on the line. Go ahead, Keisha.
Are there any sit-down Jamaican restaurants in the area?
There is a place on Livingston Avenue, kind of near Nelson Road on the east side. It's a Jamaican restaurant. I can't remember the cross street. It's right on, or maybe it's, is it, no, it's Main Street. I'm sorry, not Livingston. It's East Main, right near where the tracks go over the bridge right there. I think it's called like Jamaican Corner or something like that. That's the one I know of.
And there has been a Caribbean restaurant on Cleveland north of Hudson whose name escapes me.
Thank you very much for your call. And we have another call from someone named Scott looking for Chinese restaurants. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's it. I'd like to get a referral for what they think is really good Chinese in town, and hopefully something centrally located. Thanks.
Okay, thanks for your call. Now, this question does come up from time to time, and we've talked in the past about how Chinese food in Columbus has changed over the years, and it's kind of gone from being Americanized to more authentic and more regionalized.
And he was looking for which location?
Central location.
That's a little tough.
That is tough because the ones that always come to mind are more on the fringes of Columbus. Hunan Lion, for instance.
Right. I'm struggling to think of one in the Short North area or... It's obviously there's
central. I mean, this is not Chinese, obviously, but I actually recently tried Basil in the Short North, which is a new restaurant near 2nd or 3rd Avenue on
that's
High Street.
Thai, isn't
it's
it?
Thai, but I wanted to bring that up just because I recently ate there and I was quite pleasantly surprised by it.
Another Thai place, if you just want something sort of Asian, would be Lemongrass, also in the Short North.
And Haiku, is that Japanese?
Haiku is, Japanese, Americanized sushi.
But I think both Haiku and Lemongrass will field a number of Chinese dishes, if that would help our caller.
Right.
Yeah, I think, most places in town, too.
Yeah, it's interesting because...
including Chai Thai up on North Hamilton Road in kind of a Gahanna, New Albany area. Thai is their specialty, but they have an entire page of Chinese dishes, and that's one of my favorite Asian restaurants in the city, actually. It's in a strip mall. It's very unassuming. You'd never know it from the front, but it's a great restaurant.
Across from Home Depot.
Yeah.
Very nice inside.
Yeah, very nice.
Beautiful inside.
Well, that was the one that was on another planet for me.
That's right.
292-8513. We've got about 3 minutes left. And, Rich, one of the things you wanted to talk about was your experience at the Field to Table event.
Oh, yeah. Well, Dad.
Field to Table is an event at Franklin Park Conservatory, it's gotten so popular they didn't even send invitations this year and drew a crowd of 620. It is the exercise is in getting local product to the table done by good chefs, and then some of us pitch in for the hors d'oeuvres. And Mr. Boudros, who was the inspiration, as it says in stone, at the Live Fire Theater. There's by the new garden at the conservatory, there's a live fire area which has like five different fire and barbecue locations, and we made a bunch of stuff there. You worked on the shrimp.
Yeah, I worked on one of the featured cooking devices. There's this great steel Aztec grill. It's probably a very nice, expensive grill, but yeah, we cooked. I did a shrimp with a romesco sauce over it.
I helped out with the pizzas, the crust of which was brought to us by Anthony's Pizza, which would get some credit because it was great.
Actually, I wanted to mention that, too, for Eastsiders. There's a little tiny pizza place called Anthony's right by Capital University on Pleasant Ridge near Main Street, mm-hmm. and it's just been reopened by a gentleman by the name of Jim Douglas, and their pizzas are terrific. He does some of the best crust I've found in Columbus, and, that's the best part of a pizza, in my opinion. And, I've been there 3 or 4 times already, and it's been perfectly consistent and very good.
So now 3 pretty good pizza places.
Yeah, we're spoiled Pizza Plus, Rubino's, and Anthony's.
Well,
but this is a great addition. It's kind of in between the two. Rubino's is cracker-thin crust. Mm-hmm. Pizza Plus is fairly thick. But this Anthony's, this dough is just spectacular. It uses all, the best ingredients. And,
And
it's a generation or two worth of tradition in Bexley for pizza.
and then they do have herb gardens now at Franklin Park
they
as
do.
Well, right?
Lovely. But
so are you allowed to pick the herbs and
no,
get into
you
that?
Can't,
no?
But you can look at them, and they're really it's really well maintained. Scott Seed Company, or Scott's, gave them a good deal of money to create this, and they're running community gardens out of that location. And they've got now 130 community gardens, most of them in urban areas, and it's a great program.
Thank you all very much for joining me today. I'm Marilyn Smith, WOSU restaurant reviewer Rich Terapak and his son Rich were our guests, along with Columbus Dispatch food critic John Christensen. Thank you all very much. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus. Streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News, it's 12 o'clock. News from NPR is next.